All right, good morning, everybody. We will start today with House File 2092, but before we get there, we do have a quorum, and Representative Petersburg would like to approve the minutes for March 14th, 2023.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would move the minutes of March 14th.
Perfect. Thank you very much. Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor?
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Motion passes. All right, we are now going to move on to House File 2092. Find it in my notes. Thank you. And we have a lot of testifiers here today to testify on this bill and the next bill that we have. So we're going to need to keep everything tight to 2 minutes. So please just keep that in mind as things go forward here. And thanks, sorry. Chair Hornstein, would you like to tell us about 2092 and your DE1 amendment, please?
Thanks, members.
Got to move your bill first. Sorry.
I will move that House File 2092 be re-referred to the Committee on State Government.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Finance.
Perfect. Now, please proceed with your bill.
Thank you. Members, so the original bill, 2092, was a direct election of the Met Council. That is now going to change into a task force as the DE1 amendment. I'll explain why in a minute. But at this point, I would just ask the committee to approve the DE1, and I'd move it.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. Any discussion on the DE1 author's amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor? Anyone opposed? The motion prevails. Chair Hornstein.
And members, I also have an A1 amendment to the DE1 amendment.
Thank you very much. Do you want to say anything about the A1?
It makes a minor change in the composition of the task force that we envision.
All right, so Chair Hornstein moves the A1 amendment. Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor?
Aye.
Anyone opposed? The motion passes. All right, now we have the bill in the order you would like. Chair Hornstein, please present.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chair. Thank you, members. I am pleased to present a bill that gets us on the path of reforming and restructuring the Metropolitan Council. Members, this was originally a bill that involved direct election of the Met Council. It's a bill that I've introduced most of the biennia that I've been here since 2003. And I believe this is a year because of a combination of factors that we must act to significantly have a major reform and restructuring of this very important agency. For those of you who are following along, Representative Petersburg and I were there. I think Representative Murphy might have been there yesterday. The legislative audit of Southwest Light Rail that was released yesterday, one of a series of audits. I don't think you need to look any further as to why this effort is so important this year. And members, the reason that we are switching to a working group or a task force rather than direct election is that I've had the opportunity to talk to a number of members, not only in this committee, but the next committee of jurisdiction, and just other legislators that have an interest in metropolitan governance. And I have detected this year, members, enthusiasm and passion to reform and restructure this agency like I've never heard before. That's the good news. Now, the news that prompted this DE1 amendment is that there's no legislative consensus on how to do it. So what this amendment does is we take a step back. We still have the elected Met Council as an option, but we have several other options as well. These are things that I've heard from other legislators. And what we will do through this task force is have a very, very specific public conversation about how we reform and restructure the Metropolitan Council. Now, in a few weeks, in my faith, we'll be celebrating Passover, and we start the Passover Seder with a question. Why is this night different from all other nights? And for those of you who may have been following different efforts and task forces related to Met Council governance, you may be asking, why is this task force different from all other task forces we've had? Well, number one, this is legislatively initiated and legislatively led. The Met Council is, after all, a creature of the legislature. The other task forces have sort of dabbled around reform and recommended something called staggered terms. We'd stagger the appointed terms of the governor. I view that, members, as just simply rearranging the deck chairs on the Titanic. We have to do something more substantive. It could be an election. It could be a council of governments. It could be looking at something like a regional transit board like we've had in the past. We could do a number of different things that are far more substantial than simply staggered terms. And that is really the goal. So, members, I'll just conclude by saying we can talk and admire this problem and continue to admire this problem of accountability and transparency and governance of the Met Council. But you know what, members? It's on us. It's on us right now. We're the legislature. The Metropolitan Council is a creature of the legislature. It was created by the legislature. We are the authority that can reform and restructure this agency. So what we have in the DE1 is a process to do that. That is the bill at this point, and I have really, it's come really through conversations I've had, again, with key members of the committees of jurisdiction on both sides of the aisle, members of the public, and other legislators with an interest in metropolitan governance. With that, Mr. Chair, I know we have a few testifiers, and I'd be happy to proceed from there.
Thank you very much. Mr. Chair, we will start with Myron Orfield.
Okay. I'm Myron Orfield. I'm a former member of the legislature in the House and Senate. I was the author, with Representative Plenty, of the last major reform of the Met Council in 1994, and we had both intended that the elected council be elected directly. We failed in that effort, but we both thought that that was a large loss. The Met Council is a huge, powerful entity with lots of discretion. It has a $1.2 billion budget. It has $9 billion of bonds out. It has discretion to build a region that would be compact and orderly like Portland, or completely highways and sprawling like Detroit. It can do either of the two things. It decides where all the freeways go. It decides how big the region is, which area grows, which area doesn't. It has tremendous discretion. And in America, when we give local government bodies a lot of discretion and taxing power, they are traditionally elected. There's nothing like the Met Council anywhere in the United States that has this kind of discretion, power, taxation, and spending. I believe that it's not only a bad policy, but I believe it's likely an unconstitutional delegation of legislative authority to an administrative body. And I say this with some weight, teaching constitutional law at the University of Minnesota for 25 years, and also state and local government law. And I point you to the case of Askew versus Cross Keys Waterways, which was a decision of the Florida Supreme Court in 1978, where the Florida Supreme Court found a body much like the Met Council to be an undelegation of legislative authority to an administrative body. It's cases, I think, very much on point and shows you the dangers. So I'm supposed to be brief, which is hard for a former legislator and a law professor, but I'm going to conclude now. But just in general, I think it's a bad policy to have things that have this much power and discretion be unelected. I think that democracy is the least terrible form of government.
Thank you very much, Mr. Orfield. So we have a, like I said, we have a lot of testifiers that are on our list today, and we don't have a ton of time. So we're going to keep everyone to 2 minutes. And so I will say who's next and then who's on deck. And so if the person who is next will take one of the chairs by Chair Hornstein, and the person who's on deck will go up and take the other chair beside on the other side of him, and we'll keep things moving as quickly as we can to make sure we get as much public testimony on this as we possibly can today. So we have Commissioner Marion Green is up first, and then Scott Schultz from Noka County is up after Commissioner Green. So these are, I know that one of these is on Zoom, so we will move forward with that. But we also have a timer that is set, so when you hear the timer, please finish up as soon as you can after that. So Commissioner Green, I don't know. Don't see the commissioner in the room and not on Zoom. I just thought we'd show up. So we'll move on to Scott Schulte, Commissioner Schulte from Noka County, which is on Zoom. And then Eva Young is after Commissioner Schulte.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Hornstein and committee. Thank you for hearing my testimony. I'll be brief. I can't count the number of studies we've done on the Met Council, whether it's the OLA, whether it's a Blue Ribbon Committee or a Gold Medal Committee. There's been many. They all come up with the same thing, that we need to reform the Met Council. I applaud Representative Hornstein and his willingness to embrace an elected Met Council of some form, whether it's a council of government or a direct elected Met Council. We support in Anoka County a council of governments as opposed to a direct election. Nonetheless, we're here to discuss the delete all amendment at this point. Again, I'll ask you to remember two numbers, 402 and 1. And those relate to, there are 402 Metropolitan Planning Organizations or Met Councils across the nation. There is only one that has appointed officials. 401 are all elected in some form or another. We need to get to that. We do not need to be an outlier. We've proven through all of these studies that being an outlier in this category is not appropriate for our region. Thank you for hearing my testimony, and thanks for bringing this forward, Representative Hornstein.
Thank you very much, Commissioner Schulte. And next we have Ava Young, and then following Young is Tracy Penny, and both of these are via Zoom. And the folks who are on Zoom, if you could please make sure to get to speak up and be close to your mic. The sound is not great in this room, so it's a little hard to hear some folks. So if you could please make sure to speak up on your end, that would be appreciated. So Ava Young, please.
Hi, my name's Eva Young, and can everybody hear me?
You're great. Thank you.
Okay, good. I am also very thankful you're looking at, doing this commission, and I understand that there have been a previous commission studying the Met Council, but it does look like in the amendment it's pretty specific and some, specific charges to look at how to, what could make the Met Council work better for our area. I just want to talk briefly about how the Met Council deals with public comment, and I, from my own experience. And the Met Council does need a better way to incorporate public comment. I've been to a number of meetings, CMC meetings and then meetings in the area about the effect of the Blue Line extension in my neighborhood. One of the proposals is to put it along Lindell Avenue, which is where I live. That at these meetings, they collect feedback by, saying, well, put a post-it on this board, with your feedback, or, people say things, but there's no clear indication that they record the feedback or present it at corridor management committee meetings. An example of what they have presented instead of presenting the feedback that gets presented at meetings is that they the Met Council had three different driveway chats about the issue in our neighborhood. And
Ms. Young,
thank
you so much for being here. But if you could please give us a wrapping up statement, we've got to keep going. I apologize.
Okay. I just think this, I don't know if elected is going to be enough. So I think that the amendment is going to be good to have a more, because something needs to be done about the Met Council.
Thank you so much. I apologize for having to cut you off there, but thank you for being here. And next up we have Tracy Penny, and followed by Henry Lake. Tracy Penny? Make sure you're unmuted.
Hello, can you hear me?
There we
can
go.
You hear me now?
Tracy?
Hi.
Hi. Please say your name for the record, and please proceed.
My name is Tracy Penny, and I'm on today speaking about Met Council's Blue Line Light Rail in the Lindell area of North Minneapolis. The residents are not happy with them coming through, saying that Lindell Avenue was below poverty level, making $24,000 per year. They also stated the residents didn't have transportation, The train will provide it for the residents, told them we have the residents let them know that they have multiple cars, trucks, and boats. We stated how can we be below poverty level ranging from $4,000 to $5,000 in property tax per year. We asked where did they get their information. They were not forthcoming. They said it came from the census. The residents stated if you had really checked out our area, you would know that that isn't true. Even when they seen it wasn't true and that the residents of Lindell Avenue North did not need light rail transportation because they are not below poverty and they don't need transportation to get where they need to go. And also, the neighborhood is predominantly black on Lindell Avenue North. And Lindell, Lynn Park is called suburb in the city. And it is about 20% or less in the nation of black homeowners. Governor Tim Walz stated he wanted to help disparities that affected the black residents. After that statement, I believe that Tim Walz would not let Met Council, along with Blue Line Transit, aligning their train behind homes, Lindell, devaluing the property, taking away wealth and generational wealth. The train travels behind homes that have children. The light rail will not let homeowners know what the square footage would be that they will be taking from their property. They refuse to give information when asked, just showing lines on a map. So how will black homeowners still be at 20% when black homeowners are being devalued along with Met Council devaluing the black residents also?
Thank you, Ms. Penny. Appreciate you being here. Next is Henry Lake. Please state your name for the record and continue with your testimony.
Yes, Henry Lake Sr. One of my concerns is that some of the meetings we've gone to seem like we get different answers to from different individuals that's supposed to be speaking for Met Council that's hosting those meetings. The last one I went to, there were some residents there that had asked for a meeting where they could ask questions to Met Council, and that the rest of the people at that meeting could hear what they were saying and what the answer was. They told us, well, the individual that was hosting that day, he told us that there would be no more meetings like that where they are getting beat up by us, the residents, when we only ask questions about what's happening to our neighborhood when this train comes through. I don't understand if you have other alternate routes that you can take, why would you want to come right through the middle of this residential neighborhood? We see what happened with that Cedar condos. From what the media has said, that they've spent around $3 billion with that one Southwest Rail. I can only imagine what they're going to spend over here with this one here. Another thing, we're not anti-rail. We just don't want it coming through our backyard. What I was told a couple of weeks ago that my fence would go, probably the trees would go, and it would be close to my house by the time they got done coming down Lindale.
Mr. Lake, we've got to move forward here, so could you please wrap up and we'll go to the next testifier?
Well, I really don't want Lynn Park to be another Rondo or Cedar condo. Thank you very much.
Understood. Thank you so much, Mr. Lake, for being here. Next, we have Emma Adams, followed by Kathy Mitski.
Yes, I'm Emma Adams. My concern with the Met Council is they seem to not care about the impact of the Blue Line extension project on the Lindell route.
Can you hear her?
Yeah, you said loud and clear. You're doing great. Thank you.
Okay. And especially the proximity that the light rail would come to close to homes, schools, and a park. And there appears to be a lack of consideration for the lifelong, over 40 years investment that people in Lynn Park have put into their homes. No concern for the structures of the homes during and after the construction of a light rail in their backyards. And there should also be not be a light rail one block from three schools, especially elementary ones, and a park where young kids play, not caring about the safety of the children and other impacts to them. A train being that close to a schools and a park could cause a terrible tragedy in the future that no one should have to bear, because at that point, when that happens, thoughts and prayers are too late at that time, when it could have been prevented. Safety for the children should be a top priority. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Ms. Adams. Appreciate you being here. Next, we have Kathy Nitzke, followed by Mary Paddock. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Hi, good morning. I'm Kathy Nitzke. Can you hear me fine?
Yep.
Thank you, Representative Hornstein and the Transportation and Finance Committee. I do live in Lynn Park along Lindale Avenue here in North Minneapolis, 24 years. As you've heard from other neighbors, we have been frustrated when we attend driveway chats, meetings. It doesn't seem to fit our needs of and for the people. It works for Met Council. I think we've heard examples of that this morning. I'm a hopeful person, and when I saw this bill, HF 2092, I thought, wow, they're going to have a task force that includes a lot of membership that makes recommendations. Yay, it's for the people, of the people. What's like for Minnesota? The other thing that I saw is the list of the duties that they might recommend. There could be more. I thought, wow, we have to be hopeful here as residents of North Minneapolis. There are people like you in that room that do care. You put in the energy and the work, and I appreciate that. I hope you do support this bill. It's going to be the needed collaboration, restructuring of the Metropolitan Council and their work. Thank you.
Thank you so much for that perfect timing and for your testimony. So thank you for that. Next, we have Mary Paddock, followed by Commissioner Marion Green.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and Committee. Can you all hear me clearly?
Yes, we can. Please say your name for the record.
I am Mary Paddock, here representing two neighborhoods in Minneapolis that oppose the Kenilworth route for Southwest LRT, and I'm here to support this legislation. Repeatedly, for years, we told the Met Council that poor soil would make construction problematic. We told them it was unsafe to run electric light rail only feet away from freight trains carrying explosive hazmat. We told them that a tunnel only 18 inches from the Cedar Isles condominiums would damage those buildings. Condo residents even hired engineers to substantiate their concerns. But the Met Council ignored us, proceeded as it wished, and ran into the exact problems we predicted. As the legislative auditor reported yesterday, they are the same problems responsible for the $500 million overrun. Incredibly, the Met Council now calls those problems unforeseen. Unforeseen, my foot. They were the product of a Met Council that is staff-driven, insular, and untethered from the realities of the people who pay their salaries and whose lives are impacted by their decisions. I'm not saying that Met Council members are bad people. I'm saying that it is the natural outcome of a government body that has three things. Number one, enormous amounts of money. Number two, enormous power, and I'm almost done, enormous power that is unchecked except by one person, the governor. There have been governors in my life that I've agreed with and those that I've disagreed with, but I don't think any of them have been corrupt. But there have been corrupt governors in Illinois, Connecticut, Louisiana, North Dakota, Oklahoma, West Virginia. It could happen anywhere. It could happen here. Legislators, you have the power to fix this mess by making the council accountable to the public. Please support this legislation. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Paddock. Next, we have Commissioner Green, and then followed by Tim David. And so, Mr. David, if you could please just take the other chair that's available up there, we'll keep this moving. Thank you very much. Commissioner Green.
Thank you so much, Chair Tabke, Chair Hornstein. Thank you, members. My name is Marion Green. I'm Hennepin County Commissioner for District 3 and Chair of the Hennepin County Regional Rail Authority. Thank you so much for the opportunity to testify today. Hennepin County is home to 1.3 million residents, has one-third of the state's jobs, and is the administrator of the state's largest social safety net. As such, the county has a deep interest in the current and future success of our region and our entire state. The county and the Regional Rail Authority seek to serve residents with convenient, equitable access to jobs, schools, their daily needs, and invest significantly in the region's transit system. We're also committed to combating climate change and working collectively with the region to meet the state's carbon emission goals and improving the quality of life for our residents. We take a regional point of view to in our vision for our region. Our vision for our county is where our resident is a county where our residents thrive and where our economy thrives. This is the same vision that we have for the region as well as for our county, and we engage in many partnerships to advance that vision. The Met Council is critical to the success of our region and to tackle the significant challenges we face in building a more equitable economy and tackling climate change. Its core functions match those needs, but the Met Council's current structure makes it beholden to statewide politics and statewide interests rather than the interests of the region. As elected, an elected Met Council will be more accountable to the district and to the voters and to the region it serves. Restructuring the Met Council is not a new idea, but it is an idea whose time has come. And I will speed up. You know about the January 2011 report where the auditor recommended that the legislature should restructure governance for the Met Council. And just yesterday, the legislative auditor recognized that the Met Council's accountability to Minnesota taxpayers is limited and indirect. We've been admiring the problem for too long. Let's take it on. I also want to add, let's be clear that more must be done to ensure a successful Met Council and a thriving region. We need dedicated, significant transit funding to deliver a more equitable, high-quality transit system, to confront our climate crisis, and to build a thriving economy to compete economically with our peer regions around the nation whom we are falling behind. I want to thank you all for this opportunity.
Thank you very much, Commissioner. Appreciate you being here. Next, Tim David, followed by Peter Wagenius.
Good morning. My name is Tim David, committee members and chair. I lead the No Rush Line Coalition, which is opposing the Purple Line BRT from St. Paul to Maplewood to White Bear Lake because we do not feel it fits our communities. We fully support this amendment to 2092, which could lead to significant improvements in accountability of how the Met Council delivers its services. I previously worked at the City of Minneapolis for 12 years as an analyst evaluating performance of city departments and 13 years at Deloitte Consulting evaluating performance of government agencies at state, local, and federal level, so I have some background in this area of public sector service delivery. Our group, the No Rush Line Coalition, during the past 20 months has talked to and listened to thousands of residents in numerous communities, hundreds of businesses, and numerous elected officials who do not feel a Met Council is representing them. The general public has struggled to articulate how we feel treated by the Met Council. So rather than technical examples of accountability, let me offer a short parable. I'll be quick about this, bear with me. And I expect you'll understand the parallels I'm making here as to how the public feels in their interactions with the Met Council. The third graders are out on the playground enjoying the sunny day. A sixth grade bully steps onto the playground and says to the third grader, "Do you want me to slap you in the face or do you want me to punch you in the stomach?" When the bully is confronted by anyone in a position of authority, the bully says, "Well, I asked for his input, and he didn't want to be slapped in the face, so I hit him in the stomach." Oh, and the bully adds proudly, and three of his friends were watching. So really, I had public engagement with four people. That is how the public in our communities feel. We get punched in the gut. And who are we supposed to call our Met Council members? They do not represent us as constituents. Identifying a governance that represents us as constituents, it is time, but it's only a start in the reform and restructure needed at the Met Council. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. David. Peter Wagenius, followed by Commissioner Wickman-Brecky.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Peter Wagenius from Sierra Club. Governance of Metro Transit is bizarre, not just bizarre by national standards, but also bizarre by comparison here in Minnesota. I've shared a summary of who is accountable for governing transit in Duluth, Rochester, St. Cloud, Winona, Mankato, and Moorhead, showing a variety of models which include elected officials, appointed members, or both. But all six systems have two qualities in common. One, in none of these governing models are all the board members appointed members and also all appointed by the same person. Two, none of the elected officials or appointees are chosen based on statewide election results. In all of these models, those in charge are accountable only to local voters. That should apply to the metro area. If I were to say that we metro voters should have a direct say over how Rochester, Mankato, or any other region were to manage their transit, if I said that, you'd say to me, that's none of your business, Minneapolis man. If there were a bill that gave Ramsey County voters an equal say compared to local voters in, say, Martin, Jackson, or Douglas County over management of their county roads, I'm confident you'd vote against that bill. That the metro area is bigger is not an excuse to fail to follow normal democratic principles. This lack of accountability has impacts. Our region has gotten much bigger since 1972, including many more suburbs. Are we planning to serve them? When I last testified to this committee, we spoke about two main tools to rapidly expand metro transit, arterial BRT, which is progressing, albeit slowly. But what about highway BRT? What about Highway 36, 394, 35W North, 169 South to Shakopee, or 55 West? These corridors were studied and found worthy nearly a decade ago, but that plan has been sitting on a shelf. If Met Council members were accountable to their voting constituents, the agency would be making the case to serve all of their constituents, not managing expectations for an administration with other priorities. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Wagenius. Commissioner Wickman-Brecky, followed by Matt Massman. Commissioner, please state your name for the record and proceed.
Good morning. Barb Wickman-Brecky, Scott County Commissioner, and here today on behalf of the Minnesota Intercounty Association, where I serve on the Board of Directors. Thank you, Chair Hornstein, for authoring House File 2092 and for the opportunity to share comments. We support the reform of Metropolitan Council governance structure for the Twin Cities region and really appreciate the task force structure called for in the DE amendment. Actually, a little bit excited about it. Suburban counties have worked hard to develop a set of principles that supports the goal of reform structure, but does not add another layer of elected government to the region. A key principle for any reform of Met Council must be direct accountability to the regional communities and residents served. I think we've heard that from several people today. Under the current structure, council members have no direct accountability to metro communities or the residents, even though the council has vast decision-making authority over matters directly impacting these communities and residents. They have the power to levy property taxes, establish land use regulations, build, own, and operate major infrastructure, supersede local and elected officials on matters such as development and zoning, and assert authority over development that it deems regional in significance. A council that includes local elected officials would provide greater accountability to the public because they can reject us, they can vote us out. A structure that includes city and county elected officials would also bring together the experience and expertise of those officials in matters such as transportation, parks, land use, and other services. Locally elected officials already work across county and municipal boundaries on shared concerns, and we understand the regional blueprint, comprehensive plan, and everything else that the Met Council approves now. We really do think the Council of Governments would be effective in moving forward regional planning. And additionally, as referenced in the task force amendment, realignment of the Met Council also offers an opportunity to review responsibility for operation of regional planning, including how to best align certain functions within the context of existing state and local agencies. So thank you for bringing this bill forward. And as amended, the creation of the task force directs the most directly impacted constituencies to really have more power, more accountability, and provide the expertise that's needed to really reform and improve Met Council. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Next, we have Patty Nauman, followed by Mr. Carney. I should have said Patricia Nauman. I'm sorry. Thank you for being here. Please state your name for the record.
Thank you.
And proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Patricia Nauman. I'm the Executive Director of Metro Cities, representing cities across the seven-county metropolitan area at the legislature, executive branch, and also the Metropolitan Council. Thank you for the opportunity to testify on House File 2092, and as well as the Delete All Amendment that eliminates language requiring the Met Council to be elected and proposes a task force to study the governance of the council. Metro Cities does appreciate the pullback from the initial bill language that would require council members to be elected. Metro Cities' longstanding positions on the governance of the council are to support staggered terms, which we believe would provide stability and sort of make it less staff-driven if that's the issue, and sort of avoid deep shifts in political philosophy over time that are not appropriate to a regional, basically an operating and planning body, as well as modifications to processes for selecting members to strengthen the transparency and as well as allow for an open appointment process. Cities in the metropolitan region are especially impacted by regional policies, as they are responsible for much of the local implementation of regional decision-making. And as such, cities engage with the council across the scope of its policy and decision-making every day. To this end, the makeup of the task force may not reflect the unique and strong role cities play in the work of the council, and I look forward to continuing to work with the author and members as this language is further considered. As you discuss the language proposing a task force, Metro Cities does urge you to consider the number of recent task forces that have analyzed and made recommendations for regional governance. Comprehensive studies have involved a wide cross-section of stakeholders and been very recently conducted, including studies by the Citizens League, the Council of Metropolitan Area Leagues, which is a League of Women Voters organization, and a Governor's Blue Ribbon Committee. These studies have included input by local officials, academics, policy experts, and citizens, and all have recommended similar proposals for the council, basically that terms be staggered and improving an open process for transparency. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Thank you so much. Next we have Mr. Bob Carney, followed by David Robbins. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Bob again, Carney Jr. I had some prepared testimony, so I'm going to wing it due to the changes. What I'm proposing very briefly is that we are talking about electing Met Council members. We have two basic kinds of elections. We have nonpartisan elections and partisan elections. And I'm proposing that anybody running for the Met Council should be able to file in all of them. They should be able to file in a Republican primary election, a Democratic primary election, any other major party election, and a nonpartisan election. And as an example of the fact this canon did work, I offer Earl Warren. He was actually a Minnesota transplant before he went to California. His dad was Norwegian. His mom was Swedish. They were married in Minneapolis. In California in 1938, he won, with cross-filing, he won the Democratic primary, the Republican primary, and the Progressive primary for Attorney General. In 1942, he lost the Democratic primary for governor narrowly. In 46, he again won all three, was only opposed by the prohibition candidate. He campaigned as somebody who wanted to serve all the people, and I really do think that this comes very largely from our Nordic and Scandinavian heritage. You see that today. So I would like to advocate that we consider allowing all of these primaries to be held and to increase the ballot access for Met Council seats and, of course, to resolve any contest with ranked choice voting. I've passed out some material on this. We'll be following it up. Thank you. I hope you consider this.
Thank you very much, Mr. Carney. Next, we have David Robbins, followed by our final signed-up testifier is Cynthia Wilson. David Robbins? Cynthia Wilson, then. Last chance. All right. Is there anybody that we have not that has not testified that has come to testify today that from the public? All right. Seeing none, we'll move on to committee testimony, discussion, not testimony. However, that works. Anyone? Chair, Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Mr. Chair. Thank you for doing this. It's obvious there's, I guess, results of the legislative auditor in the newspaper today and the concerns around Met Council. And I truly believe that Met Council is doing the best that it can and with the information and experience that it has. But at the same point, there seems to be an issue in regards to transparency and some other direction that's going on. And sometimes it's just time for us to rework and redo things. And so I think this is an appropriate approach. I think just electing it outright without really fully understanding the responsibilities and the direction that's there is probably not the way to go. And so I think your approach is much better. I would also say that I think it's also time for us to, as a legislature who is responsible for setting up the governance structures that is basically similar to a cabinet position for the governor, that we are and should be responsible in setting up those responsibilities. Certainly we have to deal with federal regulations and so forth, and that's the reason why this can't be done in a short, haphazard way. And I think it needs to take a lot of a good discussion and a lot of heads put together, opportunities for input, and I think it's important to do so. I also believe that this should be have very strict timelines because it is time to move forward with evaluating, and if there's going to be reorganization, it needs to occur fast and in a timely manner at least. And so having it done for next session in January of 24, I think makes very much sense, and so I applaud you for it, and thank you for bringing for this bill forward.
Chair Hornstein.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thanks to the testifiers. Thanks to the committee. I appreciated your comments, Representative Petersburg, and the thoughtful discussion we had over the weekend about this issue. Let me just say a couple things in conclusion. I want to emphasize, unlike other studies and task forces, this is legislatively led, and we have actually, and while we're not presupposing a conclusion, we have laid out several options even in this legislation. Staggered terms is not one of them. Maybe we'll come up with that. I highly doubt it. I highly doubt it. And I would encourage the cities to think more creatively about ways in which we can make the Metropolitan Council more transparent and accountable. And finally,
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
We've got some more discussion yet.
Oh, so, I mean, thought you were asking for a conclusion.
No, you were on a roll there, so I didn't want to cut you off.
Well, I have a preview. You have a preview of my,
Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for the preview. It gives me a lot of talking points, but.
Okay.
I was at the audit yesterday too, and I was just amazed. And I'm pretty new at this, but looking at it from an outsider, for the first time, there's just a lot of things that came up for me when looking at this. And a few of the things that were said and just my observations were that the level of transparency was poor from the Met Council. They talked about a near subpoena. I mean, that's how close it got for these people who were really going outside of the bounds. There was, I'd say, borderline fraud. You know, they talk about boulders and not finding boulders and the huge expense it took for us to go around those boulders. I went online right after and said, I'm looking up, trying to find boulders in the ground. Yeah, there's lots of technology. They do it for oil all the time. How can we miss this? I heard one of the testifiers talk about, you know, of the people for the people. And really, this needs to be elected people that are involved in this. Let those special interest groups come to us. And so the counties, the townships, local government, our government, we should have a big say in this. It definitely looks like it's abuse of power, and we need to get some of that back. So that's my comment for it. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Murphy. And I just want to, for the record, echo and give a solid ditto to what Representative Petersburg said, that I think that this is a really great way forward, and I appreciate it. And now you can do your closing remarks.
Okay, well, we heard half of them. and so this is really, again, something different. And I will also emphasize, we have a timeline, and it would be my expectation, in fact, that we do not end this biennium. We do not end this biennium without a major reform and restructuring of the Met Council. Again, this is our responsibility as legislators. The ball is in our court. We've set up a very good process that's legislatively led to do what needs to be done. And I think you've heard testimony of people feel urgency around this. So here's my concluding pitch here, Mr. Chair. My first term was, I got elected in 2002. My first term was in 2003. I was in the minority, and I at least figured out one thing at that point, that you try to get someone in the majority to carry some of your ideas if possible. So that year, I proposed an elected Met Council. And the Republican who carried the bill was from Woodbury, a fellow freshman at that time, Karen Clinson. And I remember the testimony where she came and brought some patriotic symbols to the hearing, including, I think, a couple of American flags. And she simply said, this is about one thing. It's very simple. No taxation without representation. And I do believe that is one of the main reasons we need to do this, and I ask for your support. And I'll renew my motion that House File 2092, as amended, be referred to this Committee on State and Local Government, or State Government Finance.
Yep. Chair Hornstein renews his motion that House File 2092, as amended, be recommended to be referred to the Committee on State and Local Government Finance and Policy. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Anyone oppose? The motion passes. Thank you, Chair Hornstein.
Thank you, Mr. Chair members.
And now we are going to move on to House File 1402.
Okay, members, we're now on Representative Hansen's bill, House File 1402, and I will move House File 1402 with a recommendation to be re-referred to the Committee on State and Local Government Finance and Policy. Welcome back to the committee, and I believe we're going to go right to your bill and the testifiers. I see that you have an A1 amendment. No?
I do not have an amendment.
I think those are ours.
Oh, sorry. All right. The A1 amendment is coming later. Sorry about that.
Yes.
Please present your bill.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, committee members. Good morning. First, I want to start off about talking about this bill. Representative Bakeberg is my co-author, and so I would be remiss if I didn't just extend a thank you to him for co-signing this bill with me. And I really appreciate the conversations he and I have had about this and other things, so I hope he sees this at some point, but thanks again for that. This initiative has bipartisan support in both the House and the Senate, and it has in the years past as well. House File 1402 is a popular bill, so I'm going to spend a little bit more time than usual introducing it and proactively addressing some of the common conversations I've had over the last few weeks and to bring you all up to speed. I know your inboxes are full. Thank you for hearing all those messages. In short, this bill provides the option for municipalities to choose, again, this is not mandatory, to utilize statutory authority to provide a fair way to charge for new transportation infrastructure and necessitated infrastructure that's necessitated by growth and ensure that development pays for itself and is not foisted on the backs of cities' existing property tax base. While communities around the state are ready to welcome new development opportunities with open arms, they also need to be sure that there is infrastructure with adequate capacity to support that new development. Without this statutory fix in House File 1402, this additional demand requires that cities offset these costs by paying for them up front and passing these costs onto existing property owners in the community or proclaiming the project is premature and not ready until the infrastructure can be funded by that existing tax base. Currently, these costs cannot be collected from the developers to support the actual costs of development, according to the Harstad v. Woodbury court decision, where the court found that there isn't a statutory authority for cities to charge fees for future infrastructure that is needed to support this growth. As a result, currently, growth does not pay for growth. And I don't know about you all, but the vast majority of modest homeowners in my community are not keen on the idea of higher taxes to subsidize infrastructure for new developments, including for homes that many of them will never be able to afford. Now, this may not be the case for all communities, so I want to again highlight that House File 1402 is optional and simply allows cities to turn to developers to help fund these costs and does not require any municipality to take part in this model. The opposition's comments that this bill will somehow restrict developers from building affordable housing has been the most interesting argument I've heard about this bill to date. Consider this. If passing this bill means that developers will not be able to afford to build affordable housing for first-time homebuyers and low-income renters, I would ask, what's been stopping them from doing that for the last 20 to 30 years? This bill has been before the legislature for nearly 20 years, and Mr. Chair, I know that you carried this bill way back then. So why is now the time to claim that this will be the catalyst to stop developers from being able and willing to meet the market demand for affordable homes for first-time homebuyers or low-income renters, when they haven't been meeting the market demand to date, despite cities deploying all the tools and resources at their disposal to incentivize development like this? I know that my generation has been calling for this. I know that this body has been calling for this. And if existing developers were willing or able to hear and respond to this call for more affordable housing, why are we seeing more advocacy for grant programs that support the rise of new, innovative, and community-centered developers who listen to communities and are inclined to meet that demand since the current market is not? The current market has left a gap that is yet to be met. And I'm seeing more and more affordable housing developers fill this gap when we increase access to financial and social capital to get started. We all want development, but we also have to ensure that the growth brought on by development is supported by sufficient infrastructures that are needed. It's not lost on me that other market forces and the cost of land, materials, labor, and more have all played a role in the rising costs of homes. But none of that can fully explain why a clear market demand has gone unanswered in what is supposed to be an innovative free market society driven by supply and demand. The reality is that our economy is actually driven by a system of winners and losers, the haves and the have-nots, and the voices of people struggling in our economy continue to be left out. The voices of developers who are willing to respond to the calls for more affordable housing continue to be outspent and outlobbied. I am grateful to have the support behind me on this bill for House File 1402 from the League of Minnesota Cities, mayors, and city managers around the state on this bill. In closing, members, House File 1402 provides a mechanism for cities to ensure that growth pays for growth and that new development will have the infrastructure needed to support it without relying on the existing tax base to pick up the tab. I trust community-led decision-making, and I know that there will be some cities that do not employ this model in an effort to attract developers who have the ability to actually provide affordable housing for first-time homebuyers and low-income renters. I trust our local leaders to work with their communities to do what's best for their citizens and taxpayers, and I hope you will join me in putting more tools in the toolbox of our local communities. And with that, I will turn it over to testifiers.
Thank you. And Representative Elkins, you're on the list first when we get to comments. Our first testifier is Jason Weddle, the city manager of the city of Prior Lake. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Chair and members of the committee, for the opportunity to testify today. My name is Jason Weddle, and I'm the city manager for the city of Prior Lake. Of note, my career includes working within a prominent for-profit national home builder for 6 years, and that experience is foundational to the testimony I share today. House File 1402 serves to close a hole in state statute that was exposed in the 2018 court decision. Minnesota statute currently grants cities the authority to collect impact fees on new home construction to address the incremental cost each home adds to infrastructure. Water main, sanitary sewer, storm sewer, park dedication fees are all enumerated in statute. Streets are the only item not specifically listed in statute. House File 1402 addresses this omission. House File 1402 is not a new fee or a new tax, as some in the housing industry might ask you to believe. Street impact fees had been used for decades until 2018. House File 1402 simply recognizes that each new home adds 10 vehicle trips per day to road networks. So for example, in Prior Lake, we have 2,200 acres of land yet to develop. That equates to 66,000 new trips per day that will be added to our street network. And that triggers upsizing of streets. We have to add turn lanes. We have to add signals. House File 1402 places those costs on these new homes versus subsidizing home builders by shifting those costs to our existing taxpayers. House File 1402 is a bipartisan bill, and Representative Hansen and Bakeberg recognize that cities need tools to facilitate growth. This is not an affordable housing issue. The average new home being constructed in Prior Lake sells for $700,000 today, and only $20,000 is collected by the city in fees. That's 3% of the cost of a new home. If we were to eliminate every single city fee we have, are we to believe that the home builders are now going to sell those houses for $680,000? Markets set pricing, and city fees are not an appreciable factor in housing affordability. Cities are committed stakeholders in delivering affordable housing in our communities, and House File 1402 removes a barrier to sustainable growth. The absence of a fee is not the absence of a cost. It's transferring that cost to someone else. Thank you for your time, and we humbly request you address the omission in statute by fully supporting House File 1402.
Thank you, Mr. Waddell. Next, we have Mayor Jim Hovland from Edina.
Good morning, Mr. Chair.
Welcome, Mayor. It's good to see you.
Nice to see you.
Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
Thank you. Committee members, Chair Hornstein, Vice Chair Tabke, Ranking Member Petersburg, thanks for this opportunity for all of us to be able to testify this morning. My name is Jim Hovland, and thank you for bringing forward this bill. Very well stated this morning, I think. I'm the mayor of Edina, but I'm also the chair of the Municipal Legislative Commission, and I'm here testifying on behalf of that commission today, which is composed of 19 cities in the metropolitan region, ranging from Maple Grove to Prior Lake, Woodbury, all the way out to Minnetonka. So with respect to the MLC, many of our 19 MLC cities are growing rapidly. While this growth brings opportunities to our communities, it also creates challenges. Each new home brings added incremental costs to the five demand or impact areas of our city infrastructure. These five areas are freshwater, wastewater, stormwater, parks, and cars on our roads or our transportation infrastructure systems. Every new home adds 10 to 14 trips per day to our streets. At present, cities have statutory authority to levy impact fees on four of those five infrastructure areas, the lone exception being street impact fees. While many cities charge a street impact fee along with other impact fees for decades, while they did charge them for decades, the Minnesota Supreme Court found that absent clear statutory authority, cities could no longer levy the impact fee for streets. House File 1402 addresses this statutory deficiency, rightfully placing streets alongside water, wastewater, parks, and stormwater. House File 1402 further ensures that the incremental costs of growth will equitably be attached to each new home and not to be subsidized or left to existing taxpayers to pay for this impact on the overall transportation system. Absent House File 1402 passing into law, our 19 MLC cities will be in one of three untenable positions: declaring proposed developments premature or effectively disallowing otherwise beneficial development, given the existing inefficiency of the existing roadway networks to safely handle increased trips by that growth, allow growth to continue adding burden caused to existing residents as road capacity degrades, or transfer this uncovered cost of growth to the backs of existing taxpayers in order to expand roadway capacity to levels necessary to accomplish new development. House File 1402 addresses the missing infrastructure piece, we have for roads. As drafted by Representative Hansen, it fully aligns with provisions for parks, water, wastewater, and stormwater that are in statute today. In closing, as mentioned by Mr. Waddell, the absence of a fee does not equate to the absence of a cost. It is the transfer of a cost to another body, namely existing taxpayers. This is fundamentally unfair. Thank you for this opportunity to testify this morning.
Thank you, Mayor Hovland. Next, and I'll remind our testifiers here, we would like you to keep it to 2 minutes or less. We have some amendments and committee discussion to follow. Next, we have Roz Peterson. Oh, I'm sorry. Welcome to the committee. Welcome back to the Minnesota House of Representatives. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Chair Horenstein and members. My name is Roz Peterson, and I'm the Public Policy Director for NAOP Minnesota. NAOP is a national chapter of developers who do commercial properties as well as multifamily and industrial. We provide education, research, and best practices in commercial real estate. Our chapter is over 600 members strong, and on behalf of our members, I'd like to share our collective opposition to House File 1402. I will simply say we oppose this bill because of the burden it will place on new development in our state. There are already several ways cities can collect money in development agreements, making them pay for the existing street infrastructure in the development, et cetera. Developers are struggling with higher interest rates, time-consuming regulations, supply chain issues, the labor shortage, and higher material costs, making it nearly impossible to build. I attended a land development seminar yesterday, and every developer said we are headed to harder times. Minnesota is already an outlier with taxes and higher fees in comparison with other states. It is things like this bill that cause people to not want to invest in new development projects in Minnesota, as it is a very risky business. You can lose everything. Our development costs, taxes, and fees on a per square foot basis are dramatically higher than compared to other regions where you are seeing significant growth. This bill would only add to that staggering data. And that may answer your question why we're not seeing, you know, as much development. So for these reasons and more, I urge members to vote no on this proposal.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Next we have Mike Franklin, Mayor Jordan. Okay.
Thank you, Chair Hornstein and members. My name is Mike Franklin. I have the privilege of serving the residents of Jordan as their mayor and also testifying today on behalf of the Scott County Association for Leadership and Efficiency, or SCALE. And I also have the privilege of following Manager Waddell and Mayor Hovland. So you get the brief version of my testimony since you already heard some of the important elements of it. Scott County is among the fastest growing counties in the state, and Jordan is a rapidly growing city within Scott County. This is obviously a great trend for us, but growth brings incremental costs to city infrastructure, as you've heard. Each new home generates additional demand for city services, including parks, water, sewer, and of course, as you've heard, 10 vehicle trips per day to collector road infrastructure. The members of SCALE believe that it's critical that new development pay for itself. Documented fees for new street infrastructure ensures that this development is planned, connected with the source of the incurred costs, and that protects current residents and taxpayers. These are critical priorities for us. So the slightly repetitive part, but bears repeating, that we believe this bill simply closes a hole in statute that incorporates some of those other incurred costs, but glosses over one, which is namely roads. This bill addresses that omission in an important way because, as you've heard again, but it's important to reemphasize, the absence of this ability to collect a fee is not the absence of the cost. And in this case, it is a transfer to other payers, meaning property taxpayers. The cities and townships and Scott County Board of Commissioners have taken up this priority collectively, but also individually, And you have a letter in your packet that's actually signed by all 8 Scott County mayors, as well as the Scott County board chair, signifying our alignment on this issue. And I know there's many, many more beyond that, as you've heard. Thank you very much to Representative Hansen and to Representative Bakeberg for presenting this bipartisan legislation that ensures cities have the tools they need to size infrastructure to meet demand without artificially placing the cost of growth onto our existing taxpayers. Thank you very much. I'd be happy to respond to any questions you may have.
Thanks so much, Mayor Franklin. Next, we have Daniel Lightfoot from the League of Minnesota Cities. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Daniel Lightfoot with the League of Minnesota Cities. The League represents the collective interests of 837 cities across the state of Minnesota. I want to thank Representative Hansen first and foremost for authoring this bipartisan bill. And of course, I'd be remiss not to mention Vice Chair Tabke as well for his leadership on this bill in the past, a few sessions back. For decades, cities, as you've heard, have been funding infrastructure work and ensuring that they have adequate funds to do major street work to support new development, which in many cases on undeveloped land must be planned for years in advance to ensure sufficient infrastructure is available to support growth. And however, as you heard, in 2018, the Harstad versus Woodbury Supreme Court case found that there wasn't existing or current statutory authority for cities to use impact fees to support future street improvements when approving residential development. And that, as you've heard, also removed an important tool for cities and forced cities to either turn to their existing tax base to absorb costs or forego new development entirely due to the lack of infrastructure needed for new growth. Thus, the legislature is currently in a unique position to fix this problem, and House File 1402 provides a clear way to fix, a clear fix, allowing statutory cities the option to charge developers fees that cover the cost of infrastructure improvements needed. And I, just to talk a little bit about the bill language itself, the language before you, House File 1402, was developed after multiple stakeholder meetings between both proponents and opponents of the bill, and included generally 4 key principles that were agreed upon in general in those meetings. Number one, development should pay for development, including for some public infrastructure outside of the development that is connected in some fashion to the development. Two, any legislative solution should contemplate equity of fees, including the impact on what we call first in, last in development. So one developer in an undeveloped area is not paying for the full freight or cost of infrastructure to support the other developments. Three, that fees, and we acknowledge, are a part of the cost of housing. But I would note an important caveat to that that was mentioned before. Just because fees are a part of the cost of housing, there is no direct relationship between lowering these fees and an equal and opposite lowering of the cost of housing. The latter, of course, is driven by the market. And then four, no stakeholder, including cities, are interested in impeding desired development. And there has to be an essential nexus to the fees imposed and the municipal purpose for the fee. This is a fee that is charged because of development and allowing growth to pay for growth.
Thank you, Mr. Lightfoot, very much for your testimony. Next, we have Mayor Brad Wearsome from the City of Minnetonka. Welcome to the committee.
Good to be here. Thank you, Chair Hornstein, Vice Chair Tabke, and members for having me today. I'm Brad Wearsome, Mayor of the City of Minnetonka. I also want to thank Representative Hansen for authoring this important bill for growing cities like Minnetonka. Like many cities in the metro area, Minnetonka is a growing city that is in a hot housing market. While that growth is welcomed, the city has to ensure that the infrastructure is in place to support our growth. Infrastructure is needed because of incoming development, but in some cases, the city is unsure how to proceed in light of the recent Harstad court decision. In 2 of the fastest growing areas of Minnetonka, new development has necessitated significant and costly changes to city roadways and to connections between city streets and collector streets. Without this legislation, Minnetonka and other growing cities will be left with difficult and unpalatable options. One, they can increase the property taxes on existing taxpayers to fund the infrastructure necessary due to new development. Or they can choose to disallow needed development because of the inadequacies of existing infrastructure. This is termed deeming development premature and is not where a growing city wants to be. Said another way, a city that wants to accommodate growth but is stuck between a rock and a hard place. If cities are unable to pay for streets that are needed due to development, they will stop growing. This is counter to the legislature's stated goals, and it exacerbates the already critical housing shortage that exists in Minnetonka, or in Minnesota, rather. And so I just urge you to support House File 1402, and thank you for the opportunity to be here today.
Thanks so much, Mayor. Next, we have Matt Spellman from the Realtors. Welcome to the Transportation Committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Matt Spellman. I'm the Director of Governmental Affairs for the Minnesota Realtors Association. Minnesota Realtors is a statewide business trade association with a membership of over 22,000 real estate professionals working with buyers and sellers of all types of property throughout every district in the state. Thank you for the opportunity to share our concerns with House File 1402. Minnesota is experiencing a chronic housing supply shortage, particularly at price points that are broadly affordable to more Minnesotans. Minnesota's supply problem has been and continues to put significant upward pressure on home prices. I want to highlight a few key metrics for the committee as you consider this legislation today. According to our February 2023 housing market report, Minnesota only has 1.3 months' supply of inventory, and that's statewide. To put that into context, 4 to 6 months' supply of inventory is necessary for the market to be considered well-balanced between buyers and sellers. We aren't even close to the low end of a balanced market. Last month, the median sales price of a home statewide was $315,000. If we look back only 8 years in 2015, the statewide median sales price was $176,000. That is a $139,000 jump in only 8 years. Last week, Minnesota Realtors testified in Housing Committee on Representative Elkins, House File 2235, also known as the Legalizing Affordable Housing Act. House File 2235 is a comprehensive bill addressing various provisions related to local land use, building permits, building codes, and impact fees like those defined in House File 1402. While we understand there are infrastructure needs associated with building new housing, continuing to add to the cost of new development through impact fees runs counter to making housing more affordable in Minnesota. These impact fees will be passed on to the home buyer and incorporated into the mortgage, forcing the owner to pay thousands of dollars in interest over the life of the home loan. Minnesota needs more housing of all types that is broadly affordable to more Minnesotans to meet current and future demand. Impact fees on new development will simply add to the cost of housing, making housing less affordable to Minnesotans. Thank you for the opportunity to share our concerns with House File 1402.
Thank you so much for your testimony. Next, we have Joseph Jablonski. Please state your name for the record. Welcome to the Transportation Committee.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. And it's an honor to be here today before you. My name is Joe Jablonski. I'm the Director of Land Development for Lennar Corporation. Working for Lennar over the last 20-plus years, I've had the privilege to work in many municipalities throughout the metro area. In doing so, to create neighborhoods where thousands of Minnesotans proudly now call home. I'm here today to speak in opposition of the new proposed street impact fee bill. A street impact fee adds to the cost of home ownership, specifically for new construction. An impact fee such as this places undue burden on new construction, requiring new homeowners to pay for infrastructure upgrades that will benefit an entire city and existing homeowners as a whole. As an example, a new developing subdivision with 100 new residents could be asked to fully fund an intersection improvement that has been deemed failing in its current state. Applying new fees such as these to fix problems that already exist. That is what this fee allows for. City area charges for sewer, water, storm sewer, and park dedication fees that have been mentioned in previous testimony generally increase by 10% year over year. Coupled with rising costs for materials, labor, housing affordability, and new construction, climbs dramatically to the price where it outpaces the affordable aspects for people to reach. The second part of this bill that is of particular concern to the housing industry provides municipalities the opportunity by ordinance to reject a subdivision based on inadequate road infrastructure within a city. As a developer, this is a particular concerning statement that gives the city the ability to deny subdivisions for a road or traffic issue that may be in an unrelated part of the city. There is already enough land use and zoning code regulation. Municipalities do not need more opportunity to prevent landowners from developing their properties. There are better ways to fund street improvements.
We've had a lot of testimony from the proponents. I'll give you just a few more, another half minute, because we want to get some parity with the opponents. But if you could wrap it up in a half minute or so, that would be great.
There are better ways to fund street improvements. The collaborative approach used by the cities of Maple Grove and Inver Grove Heights, for example, have proven that there are successful ways to fund road improvements within a city. At a time when fees and development costs are already at an all-time high, adding an additional tax such as this is just the wrong approach. Thank you for your time.
Thanks so much for your testimony.
Thank you.
The last testifier who has signed up ahead of time is Nick Erickson from Housing First. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you. Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Nick Erickson. I'm the Senior Director of Housing Policy for Housing First Minnesota. We're a statewide trade organization who build the communities and places that we all call home. Our organization's mission is homeownership opportunities for all, and that's what brings me here today, because this bill really places homeownership at threat. And as state legislators across the nation are lifting roadblocks to housing affordability and access, including the lifting of the impact fee that this bill creates, we would stand apart and be the one state adding to its housing cost problem. Now, you've heard a lot of statements about the Harstad v. Woodbury case, just a clarification for the record. These fees have never been authorized under state law. It's been alluded to several times. There's been a 20-year legislative fight to create this housing tax. This has never been authorized. Any past collection would have been done so in violation of state law, which was actually on the record in the Harstad v. Woodbury case, when the city was told in order to continue collecting this fee, state law would have to be changed. Now, I have studied the past illegal use of this housing tax, because that's what this is. It is a tax on housing. And when asking cities to show a specific property and where these individual road improvements were paid, or where, you know, can you trace the money from a home buyer who paid this tax? Because it's not developers who pay this tax, it's home buyers. And they're paying it at 15-year high mortgage rates. And we asked them, can you show us where this housing tax was paid? And they could not point to a specific land or specific lot, specific home, and what street improvement projects were paid. And that is raises significant questions about fairness and access. Now, these plenty of options exist for cities. There's street special assessments, property tax payments, TIF, special service districts, and I could go on. The important thing about all of these is not a single one of these includes mortgage payments. These are tacked on to a property tax bill or another method. None of these are paying 7% interest for 30 years on a housing tax. And, you know, that really is important because just last week I spoke to the Minneapolis Star Tribune. I don't know if you saw this on Sunday. Minneapolis Star Tribune talked about the need of and the lack of new starter homes and existing starter homes in the market. Interestingly, Minnesota stands apart. We have a median new home price of $523,000, nearly $100,000 more than our neighboring states, including Illinois. Here in the Twin Cities, and Mr. Jablonski's company is operating in many of these states, we have less than 2% of our new housing available at the sub-$300,000 price point. Yet in communities like Indianapolis, Chicago, where Lenar and many other
Mr. Erickson,
members...
Again, I'll give you a little leeway here, but we need to move on.
Yep. Well, I'll tell you, they allow these homes to be built. Where allowed new starter homes are built. Just as you're considering creating this housing tax, because again, that's what this is, you are making our housing problems worse and stand apart from every other progressive legislature in the country who is instead lifting these roadblocks to housing affordability and access. Thank you.
Thanks so much for your testimony. Members, if there's any quick comments or questions related to the testimony, and then we'll dive into our amendments. Okay. All right. You did want to talk. Okay. Representative Elkins.
Yeah. But this, Mr. Chair, more comments or okay. reaction to the testimony.
Please,
than
proceed.
Questions,
yes.
Say. So, first of all, I would like to thank Representative Hansen for bringing this bill forward. As she knows, I've been working in this battle for a number of years as well. I want you to know that while we were sitting here, I signed on to your bill. So I have to say that I found the testimony of Mr. Waddell and the two mayors compelling. I have been studying this problem for a long time, and my basic assessment of the problem is that developers talk about the three L's being the main factors of the cost of housing: land, labor, and lumber. And to that, I would add a fourth L, which is law, which is the regulations that we and cities promulgate. Mm-hmm. And that makes this problem complicated. There are lots of dimensions to it. In my opinion, the most important of those is the supply of land. Prices for housing are not determined by cost. They're determined entirely by supply and demand. And right now, we have a severe restriction of supply. And the main point of leverage in the supply is zoning and local regulations. And as we heard from Mr. Waddell and the mayors, when cities are not given a tool to finance the cost of the infrastructure needed to support housing, development paying its own way, they have a number of means at their disposal to block the development of land just by not making it available. Discussed one this morning, declaring development premature. They can also formally declare building moratoria. They can force the developers to only develop under the very expensive and complicated planned unit development process, which is expensive to go through and adds risk to the process. So cities have an almost unlimited array of tools to prevent development that does not pay its own way. So in my opinion, one of the testifiers, Mr. Spellman, alluded to my Legalizing Affordable Housing Act, I think that the biggest single leverage is give cities a tool that allows them to get development to pay its own way as an incentive to open up more land for development. And so I included a provision like this in my housing bill. I strongly support passing this one way or another because I think that passing this is a key, eliminates a key block to the development of additional housing.
Thank you, Representative Elkins. Anyone else? We should get into these amendments here. And our first one is A1 with Representative Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll move the A1 amendment.
A1 amendment is moved.
Perfect. So this amendment makes absolute sense in my mind due to the fact that the reasons that everyone has testified for this is that they can utilize it to help the development that they're assessing that fee onto, even though there are already numerous tools to in the toolbox, as we like to say, with cities as to how they can develop their own communities. This would require that municipalities that utilize this tool will be able to use that fund within 5 years to pay for the streets that they're apparently taxing the community for. So you build a house, great. You tax them for that building of that house, great. And then you use it to pay for the road that you're building. It makes perfect sense. 5 years is what they'll have in order to pay for that road, which if you have a house without a road built already and it takes your community 5 years to build the road and the house is all by itself, that doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me. So 5 years and then give it back if you don't utilize it for that exact project.
Thanks, Representative Olson. Representative Hansen, do you have a response or recommendation to the committee on this amendment?
Thank you, Chair, and thank you for the intent of the amendment. In my discussions with our stakeholders, this is not supported. 5 years is a non-starter. Cities don't control the pace of development, and so I would ask for a no vote.
Last word, Representative Olson or others. Committee discussion, Representative Olson.
Well, I think that that's pretty interesting that you're going to assess the fee 5 years before their housing development or their real estate development begins. I think that's pretty poor planning on the part of the community. I would ask for a yes vote and a roll call on this.
Roll call is requested and granted. Is there any further discussion? The author is recommending a no vote. Any further discussion? Okay. I saw Representative Petersburg in position with his mic, but maybe that's just his vote. Okay. The clerk will take the roll.
Hornstein.
No.
Hornstein, no. Tabke.
No.
Tabke, no. Petersburg.
Aye.
Petersburg, aye. Brand.
No.
Brand, no. Elkins.
No.
Elkins, no. Fogelman.
Yes.
Fogelman, yes. Hudella.
Yes.
Hudella, yes. Cagle.
No.
Cagle, no. Kraft.
No.
Kraft, no. Murphy.
Yes.
Murphy, yes. Nelson.
No.
Nelson, no. Norris.
No.
Norris, no. Olson.
Yes.
Olson, yes. Censor Mira.
No.
Censor Mira, no. West.
Aye.
West, aye. And Mr. Chair, we have 6 ayes and 9 nays.
There being 6 ayes and 9 nays, the motion does not prevail. The next amendment is A2, also Representative Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll move that one as well, and then I'll just go straight into talking about it to save some time. So this one changes just the number 5 to the number 10 years. If you cannot pay for your street in 10 years or the development has not happened in 10 years, why in the world would this be anything other than a money grab? If the city is trying to grab money from people who are trying to develop and build affordable houses, and this is conversations we've had every single day here in the state capitol, I think that if you cannot utilize the money that you've grabbed from developers, from the house buyer in 10 years, I think you are making a huge mistake and you are inappropriate utilizing funds. So let's make it 10 years now because you said that maybe the development didn't happen after 5. Well, if it didn't happen after 10, I wonder if it's even going to happen. I would like a roll call on this one, too.
Thank you. The roll call will be granted. We have a couple members that want to speak to this amendment. First, Representative Petersburg, then Representative Tabke.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this one I will talk about because I think 10 years is enough. Down in our area, most contractors that are developing property also build the streets, okay? Because you can't get to the house without the streets ahead of time. And infrastructure and stuff underneath it as well. That's usually the first thing that goes in is a street development based upon that. And so now you're asking not only are they going to build a street, now you want them to assess the hook in and connection to it. It just makes sense that if the city doesn't need it for that, it shouldn't have to, shouldn't be able to keep the excess as well.
Thank you, Representative Petersburg. Representative Tabby will actually be speaking after the amendment. So, Representative Hansen, do you have a comment or advice for the committee?
Thank you, Chair, and thank you again for the intent. Again, in our communication with stakeholders, 10 years is closer to a reasonable negotiation. I wish you had reached out sooner so we could have really worked on the language. But the language here really isn't ready for prime time, and so for that reason, I would ask for a no vote.
Thank you. The author requests a no vote. Representative Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's interesting that this has been going on for 20 years, this bill, and I would still state that the entire bill in itself is not ready for prime time. It's actually quite terrible in all reality. I think that 10 years is more than enough to develop a road. If you can't build a road in 10 years, if you can't build a building in 10 years, what are we doing? Building a castle? Are we building the Taj Mahal here? And anyways, the Taj Mahal would have a pretty huge tax base if it was privately owned, which would then maybe pay for that road. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Spoken like a true social studies teacher. Thank you. Who knows about the Taj Mahal? Okay, members, we have a roll call, and the clerk will take the roll.
Hornstein.
No.
Hornstein, no. Tabke.
No.
Tabke, no. Petersburg.
Aye.
Petersburg, aye. Brand.
No.
Brand, no. Elkins.
No.
Elkins, no. Fogelman.
Yes.
Fogelman, yes. Hudella.
Yes.
Hudella, yes. Cagle.
No.
Cagle, no. Kraft.
No.
Kraft, no. Murphy.
Yes.
Murphy, yes. Nelson?
No.
Nelson, no. Norris?
No.
Norris, no. Olson?
Yes.
Olson, yes. Censormiro?
No.
Censormiro, no. West?
Aye.
West, aye. Mr. Chair, we have 6 ayes and 9 nays.
There being 6 ayes and 9 nays, the motion does not prevail. The A3 is our next amendment, Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And as long as we're doing roll call, let's do the roll call on this.
All right. Roll call is granted.
You're getting good at these. So we heard a lot about the Met Council and transparency and other things yesterday and so forth. This basically is just a transparency amendment that says within 30 days of imposition of this that the community is notified about it, because it does more than just talk about the imposition of the fee and the applicant. It also talks about the number of units and so forth, which I think is very important for the community to know, who may not have followed along. So I'm asking for a yes vote on this one.
Thank you. Is there discussion? Okay, Representative Tapke.
Thank you, Chair Hornstein, and Representative Petersburg. So with, I think this should actually be the other way around. So what this bill does is it keeps development fees from going on existing property taxes. That's what it does. This is a way to keep property taxes lower for communities. And so the way this should work is if developers were needing to do something, that has to get paid by somebody. And so it has to get paid by someone somewhere along the line. And the way it is right now is it goes to property taxes. And so this is a property tax on just, and new developments, in my opinion, should pay for themselves. And so the way your amendment is structured is that if someone a new development is forcing more infrastructure to be created, then from there, that's what should be notified to the public, because that is going to be a direct property tax increase on the public, not this bill. We should be notifying the public on this bill, if it were to pass, that this is putting the development fees on the development, not on the existing property tax member. So that's existing property taxpayer. So I don't support your amendment as it is, but I'd absolutely, if this doesn't make it all the way through, that we should absolutely be alerting property taxpayers that development is forcing more property taxes on those folks.
I'm going to go to Representative Petersburg, and then we'll get some advice from Representative Hansen, and then we'll vote. Representative Petersburg.
Thank you. Thank you, Representative Tapke, for opening up that door, because I was going to wait for my final discussions on the bill to bring that up. And because you talk about property taxes, and this fee is in lieu of additional property taxes for that property. And so it's important for the community around them to know what the cost is for the infrastructure. And one of the things that the mayors have all talked about, and I don't begrudge them, if I was them, I would look for every opportunity to increase my revenue source as well. One of the things that nobody talked about was the fact that these developments also increase the financial base for the property tax collections, meaning that when that goes up and the houses are sold, that automatically has an increased value and increased revenue source for the city to use for normally what most people would expect is the cost of the infrastructure. And so you're asking not only the providers of the development to pay for the fees for maintenance. In some cases, they're already putting in the cost of the infrastructure, and then you're saying, but you also got to pay for the fees for that, in which most people figure that the property taxes are used for the infrastructure needs. If we were to have an existing house needing infrastructure maintenance in front of them, they would have expected that their property taxes would have paid for that. That is the same thing here. If there's infrastructure needs, development connections, that's part of the cost of the city providing the business and an opportunity for us to implement revenue sources for them. If the city isn't collecting enough tax base in order to cover all the infrastructure, I would say shame on them, but because that's their opportunity to do so. But to say that we were going to create a situation where new development comes in, increases the tax base for that particular city, and then we're going to tack on the cost of the individual that is building that to pay not only for that infrastructure, some of the infrastructure cost, but also the connection fee, that's a boon for the city, and it's not really paying for the cost of it. And so this is certainly appropriate for the community to know what that is all happening and what the costs are. That's what this bill, this amendment does.
Thank you. I think you gave your summation, but I will defer to the author for any advice and counsel here.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you for this. I'm going to ask for a no vote, and I will tell you why. First of all, this is pretty uncommon to happen, so I think there's not a lot of precedence for this, and that's one piece. Two, it's not widely supported by the stakeholders. Three, newspapers and city websites are not a sufficient way, at least for my generation, to be notified about something. We're not reading the newspaper. We are not looking at the city website on a regular basis. Whether we should or not is a different discussion for a different day. Maybe if you put it on Twitter or something or on Facebook, more people would see it, but I don't think that these primary ways would get to us. And also, I don't see any request for it to go out in the mail, which I think would maybe be a place to meet in the middle. But in any event, this is not common, and it's not a real effective way to communicate with residents. I also want to mirror what Vice Chair Tabke said, is that I would agree that if we don't put in this place, I do think that we should notify property owners of how much their property taxes are going up as a result of the developers. So I would ask for a no vote.
Thank you. We have a roll call, correct, Representative Petersburg? The author is recommending a no vote. The clerk will take the roll.
Hornstein.
No.
Hornstein, no. Tabke.
Nope.
Tabke, no. Petersburg.
Aye.
Petersburg, aye. Brand.
No.
Brand, no. Elkins.
No.
Elkins, no. Fogelman.
Yes.
Fogelman, yes. Hudella.
Yes.
Hudella, yes. Cagle.
No.
Cagle, no. Kraft.
No.
Kraft, no. Murphy.
Yes.
Murphy, yes. Nelson.
No.
Nelson, no. Norris.
No.
Norris, no. Olson.
Yes.
Olson, yes. Sensormira.
No.
Sensormira, no. West.
Aye.
West, aye. And Mr. Chair, we have 6 ayes and 9 nays.
There being 6 ayes and 9 nays, the motion does not prevail. Our final amendment belongs to Representative Hudella, the A4.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to move the A4.
A4 is before us.
Thank you. Members, just a few short minutes ago with our last bill, we closed with no taxation without representation, and really commend the chair for that. Huge fan, so keep that in the back of your head. This new fee, you can call it an imposing or a impact fee or whatever you want. It's a tax, and it's a brand new tax that's being given directly to our developers who are 100% going to then pass that on to the homeowners or the tenants at a time when we're trying to create more affordable housing. What my amendment does is, I'll back up for just one second. Cities love this bill because it allows them to directly place this tax without representation or a vote from the people. They already have tools that they can accomplish the same thing, such as a local operating sales tax. And I carried a bill this year for the city of Cottage Grove so that they can put that out to the voters in their communities. What my amendment says is, when we hit the higher dollar marks with this bill, when we hit $1 million, the city needs to do just that and allow for representation for this new tax. So I would encourage a yes vote, and I would ask for the final roll call.
Okay,
Mr.
we
Chair.
Have a last roll call. Very quickly, a response. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, members. Thank you for the intent of this. I get where you're trying to go with this. I understand that communication with constituencies and citizens is important. But I just want to, again, highlight that this is not a tax, and I think we need to be responsible in talking about that. Also, city councils and mayors are elected. And we also, as legislators, as a government at the state level, we have a responsibility to encourage and support our constituents to be active in their civic engagement. Citizens should always engage their lowest level and closest layer of government and ask these very questions. They should ask their mayors, how are you going to do this? How are you going to talk about this? This is how we keep our government responsible to the people. This is how we exercise what I call the politics of care, and that we incorporate the voices of our communities. I have concerns about the cost of another election and what does it cost to put this in there, because I don't see anything covering that. I see that there's like some appropriations and things in here, but I do appreciate the mail option, I will say that. And I don't love that this would potentially delay developments that they're trying to get there. So again, I do wish folks would bring some of this stuff sooner, because I could have gone over this with stakeholders and had some different answers from them for you. But as it stands, at the brief glance we had in the last day or so to look at this, This is not widely supported by the stakeholders, so I'm going to have to ask for a no vote.
Representative Della, any last word here?
Just quick closing. We heard about 5 and 10 year windows for development, so I don't think saying, well, this will be delayed as dropping into the next election or special election is realistic. But again, members, a yes vote is a vote for no taxation without representation, and I ask for a yes vote. Thank you.
Thank you so much. The clerk will take the roll.
Hornstein,
no.
Hornstein, no. Tabke?
No.
Tabke, no. Petersburg?
Yes.
Petersburg, yes. Brand?
No.
Brand, no. Elkins?
No.
Elkins, no. Fogelman?
Yes.
Fogelman, yes. Hudella?
Yes.
Hudella, yes. Cagle?
No.
Cagle, no. Kraft?
No.
Kraft, no. Murphy?
Yes.
Murphy, yes. Nelson?
No.
Nelson, no. Norris?
No.
Norris, no. Olson?
Yes.
Olson, yes. Sensormiro?
No.
Sensormiro, no. West?
Aye.
West, aye. And Mr. Chair, we have 6 ayes and 9 nays.
Thank you, members. Before we proceed to a vote, I will ask Representative Olson wanted to make a comment. We'll go to the author, and then we'll. Oh, and Representative Petersburg will make a quick comment. What's that? Oh, the amendments. Sorry, the amendment does not prevail. Now, Representative Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is an interesting concept, an interesting bill, and it's been around for 20 years, as we said. Now, we had the testifier, or the author of the bill, commented that this is a really popular bill. Well, it may in fact be popular if you include the fact that this bill has never once been carried or chief authored by the same person every single time in the last 20 years, which is really kind of a red flag in my mind as to why in the world we have this really popular bill that someone is putting forward and then realizing that it may in fact not be such a good idea. You know, there are so many tools in the toolbox of cities. I used to be the mayor of a small city, and I know those tools. You can assess streets. You can even what we would do is if someone was interested in coming to our community to build something or to install a business, we would incentivize it. We gave one individual, they got 3 years without paying any taxes because they were bringing a business into our town. So, you know, if this goes through and the intent of it happens in these communities that are saying, oh, we just have to make these fees and pass it on to the homeowners, I would absolutely invite the developers to come to my neck of the woods. We'll actually help you build your buildings and help you develop because we want you there. When you're talking about building a development, I looked up Walmart here in Ramsey County. There's a Walmart that's paying $340,000 a year in taxes to their community. If you cannot pay for the road or the investment with the $340,000 a year that you are receiving from that business, you are doing something wrong, and you are just trying to grab the money from the people who are trying to live and work and thrive in your community. You talk about a tool in the toolbox. You know, this might be a tool, but this might be a rotten apple in your toolbox, and that will hurt every aspect of your toolbox.
Okay, we are going to take 2 very quick comments and vote. Representative Petersburg and Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would ask for a roll call on the final passage.
Roll call requested and
granted. And then I would say, I gave you my spiel before, but I'll leave you with this question. The author said that my amendment was very uncommon, and we don't generally do that. Exact same truth can be said about this bill. It is uncommon, and we've never done it before. Thank you.
Thank you. And Representative Murphy, and then we'll go to the author.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just think the communities that I represent would see this as an anti-housing bill. I mean, when you're looking at trying to track growth, like Representative Olson talked about, there's lots of incentives always for new development, new businesses. And your home equity goes up when your community grows. And those are all benefits to you. People that live in a community for a while in a growing community, they get the benefit of being able to move from house to house or move into the country nearby because their home equity has gone up. So I just see that communities are going to look at this as an anti-housing bill.
Thank you. And Representative Hansen, if you have a few seconds, and then we'll go to a vote.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, members. I just want to make a few, like, 1 or 2 sentence comments on what was just said. So, yes, this bill's been around for 20 years. Yes, there's different lead authors, and there's a lot of reasons for that. Mentorship, shared leadership, different approaches, empowerment, teamwork. I could go on and on, but there's good reasons for it, and I don't think it should be a red flag. I think it should be indicative of our party's ability to work together on things and to spread the workload to do what's good for Minnesotans. So I want to double down on that. I also want to comment that Walmart is also one of the largest recipients of SNAP benefits in this country, so their business model actually costs taxpayers more money, and so low wages have an impact that we really don't incorporate into the, maybe the Transportation Committee. I'd invite you to come to the Human Services Committee to hear about how much we spend to subsidize some of those things.
Thank you, Representative Hanson.
I will also say that it's common for us to charge infrastructure charges for other things like sewage, and so there's that. So then can I go to my closing comments now, Chair?
Representative Hanson, we really are over time. We need to vote. If you can just keep it to a minute or less.
Yep, I can do that. I'll talk very fast today. So as I talked to my constituents last summer and last fall, and as I saw in every mail piece that went to my neighbor's mailboxes and clogged their YouTube consumption, I heard loud and clear that people in my community, especially in my age group, as well as seniors on fixed incomes, are largely struggling to make ends meet. They clearly called on and supported me with the hopes that I and our body would do our part to reduce the cost of out-of-control things on their checkbooks. And I think it's fair to say that this sentiment was heard statewide. We have nearly 53% of people in this country making between $50,000 and $100,000 a year saying that they live paycheck to paycheck. So nearly every little bit that we put onto property taxes backs matters. And so they did not ask me to raise their property taxes. They did not ask me to try to offset that while they're trying to raise a family, pay off student loans, and do so much more. The cost of housing for our generation are higher than they've ever been.
Thank you. Thank you so much for your bill and your comments. Members, we are going to a vote. The clerk will take the roll on House File 1402. I renew the motion that House File 1402 be re-referred to the Committee on State Government Finance. The clerk will take the roll.
Hornstein.
Aye.
Hornstein, aye. Tabke.
Aye.
Tabke, aye. Petersburg.
No.
Petersburg, no. Brand.
Aye.
Brand, aye. Elkins.
Aye.
Elkins, aye. Fogelman.
No.
Fogelman, no. Hudella.
No.
Hudella, no. Cagle.
Aye.
Cagle, aye. Kraft.
Aye.
Kraft, aye. Murphy.
No.
Murphy, no. Nelson.
Yes.
Nelson, yes. Norris.
Yes.
Norris, yes. Olson.
No.
Olson, no. Sensormira.
Yes.
Sensormira, yes. West.
No.
West, no. Mr. Chair, we have 9 ayes and 6 nays.
There being 9 ayes and 6 nays, the motion prevails, and Representative Hanson, you're on your way to state government. We are adjourned.